It's 7:30 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. In Elkins, Michael Klein and his wife teach young students history through song.
Many students don't have this connection with the past, and they hate history because they can't relate to it. It's stuffy, it's dusty, and they don't want any parts of it. The kids just seem to grow by leaps and bounds as they connect with the past.
The story coming up on this West Virginia morning. Child and family advocates are continuing their push at the State House for the restoration of $800,000 in state funds. The cut from service programs across the state was the subject of a vigil at the Capitol yesterday. It was during that vigil that both advocates and lawmakers continued to put pressure on the governor to reverse his decision. Ashton Mara reports.
We may lose this fight, but we're not going to lose the war.
Executive Director of the West Virginia Healthy Kids and Families Coalition, Stephen Smith, seemed as confident as ever that if he and other advocates just kept pushing, they would soon see a change, one that includes the restoration of more than $800,000 in state funding for child and family services.
We want commitments from our legislators and from the state that we'll never be in this position again.
Smith stood in the lower rotunda of the Capitol, surrounded by fellow social service advocates, holding signs. Some contain countless purple ribbons representing families expected to lose services if the cuts aren't restored. Others with 80 pink slips representing the number of jobs expected to be lost. Marcia Drake, executive director of Women's Aid in Crisis, a resource for women who suffer abuse, is one agency losing an employee due to the cuts.
We are losing our counselor. She happens to be a psychologist, and she was providing services at a rate that we could afford, and we are losing that position because we're going to be losing, you know, probably $25,000 to $30,000.
But Drake says her organization is not the only one. 13 other programs will be affected, including child advocacy centers, family resource centers, and other domestic violence and prevention programs. The groups have been calling on the governor for weeks to add a funding bill to the current special session, but that didn't happen. And Senate President Jeff Kessler says he doesn't expect it to.
I would like to be here and tell you that, you know, we're going to have the remaining cuts restored before we leave town, but I'm not going to raise your expectations unnecessarily here today. I don't anticipate that's going to happen before we leave town, and that's the cold but stark truth. But my message to you is don't give up on our kids, don't give up on our children, and I pledge to you I have not, I will not.
Kessler says if these groups want to see the change, they have to make a commitment to educate the governor and his staff about what they do.
There is some education that needs to be done from your groups with the governor's office and his administration, Secretary Bowling and others, to convince them that these programs are not duplicitous. They are not duplicates. You're not one program doing the same thing that another's doing. And that needs a message that needs to be made, and that's a presentation that you need to make clearly and concisely.
House Speaker Tim Miley didn't attend the vigil, but joins Kessler in his backing of the groups.
You know, a lot of people have skepticism over social programs and the money that's put into them, but the fact is, if these are the only programs that seem to have the potential to intervene in the lives of these families, to break that cycle of poverty and help these kids born into these homes, you know, leave that life of poverty behind, and whether it be a poverty issue or a domestic violence issue. I mean, if these services aren't being provided, then what services are? I mean, how does intervention occur if not through these services that we're talking about?
But Miley says for the administration, it's not a question of are those programs important. It's a question of being able to afford them in an incredibly tight budget year.
And the governor's, you know, fiscally conservative, which is not a bad thing. And when you have to make cuts, do you make them generally across the board, or do you make some additional or greater cuts in certain areas and less in others? And so the governor, with his line item veto power, chose to make cuts to these programs as well as cuts across the board in many others. And I think his position is, as communicated to me, is that if he starts opening the door to restore some of the cuts he line item vetoed, it creates a slippery slope to then decide, are the other cuts in these other programs not worthy of restoration.
Miley says right now, the governor's focused on the efficiency and effectiveness of the programs before restoring any additional funds. But Kessler reminds advocates there is still time before the end of the fiscal year. The new budget that lacks the program funding will take effect July 1st. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
What's next for West Virginia? That's a question that will be posed to community members at meetings across the state in the coming months. The West Virginia Center for Civic Life promotes local dialogue to challenge us to talk about problems and find solutions to better the quality of life here. The center is holding its 18th annual Civic Life Institute at the University of Charleston on June 4th and 5th. The institute will train citizens from across the state to hold and facilitate local meetings to find out what's next for West Virginia. Center Director Betty Knighton and Catherine Moore, an Appalachian Transition Fellow assigned to the project, stopped by our studios to talk about the initiative.
It's an opportunity for people to come together and learn the skills and practices of convening the community in which they live for dialogue that brings different points of view into the room, and then to move from dialogue into local actions that will have a positive impact on the community.
So people attend this institute really to do what?
They attend the institute to learn how to be kind of champions for civic engagement in their community. People who promote the idea that communities need to get the members of their communities together to set directions for how they want to live, how they want to work together, the issues that are important for them to work on. And so there are some skills involved in getting diverse sectors to come together to talk about some of these complex issues. And there's also an openness to partnerships that people can develop through working with other people in their community or throughout the state.
Catherine, who should come to the Institute?
Well, I think this year is going to be an interesting year for the Institute because there's this new initiative that's being launched, and it's called What's Next West Virginia. That initiative is going to be one of the main focuses of the Institute this year. And What's Next West Virginia is a conversation. It's actually like a series of conversations, a bunch of conversations that are going to be taking place all across the state here in West Virginia about West Virginia's economic future and how we're going to get there. So anyone who feels like they want to set directions for their community, who wants to learn how to facilitate and convene and bring people together to talk about this issue, the Institute is their first chance to do that. They're going to have other opportunities. We're going to hold regional workshops across the state for anyone who wants to convene one of these local discussions. But this is their first opportunity, and it's going to be a great chance to meet people from many different counties, many different walks of life, many interests, all of them having that common thread of they want to improve their communities through this thing called civic engagement, specifically about our economic future and where we're going.
Is it a question? Is the title of the initiative, does it end with a question mark? What's next, West Virginia? Or is it a statement of what's next for us, West Virginia, or for you?
It's a question mark. Uh-huh. And it's also a statement, I think, for some people who have particular points of view. But the initiative is about the question mark. It's about the idea that people have an opportunity to come together, explore that question. What's next for their community? We're saying what's next, West Virginia. But in some cases, it might be what's next for Richwood, West Virginia. What's next for the east end of Charleston? What's next for Boone County? What's next for the eastern panhandle? People will localize the conversations to the needs and the interests of their own community, the gaps they want to fill, and the kind of support systems they want to build for a strong local economy.
I think that's interesting because what's next looks forward.
I think your question, is it a question, is it a statement? I mean, in a way, the question is the statement because we don't know. And the project isn't purporting to know that we know. I mean, we don't know. Nobody knows what's next, but we can talk about it and we can explore possibilities and we can try to come to some common ground, things that we can agree on that we'd like to envision for our state. So the question is the statement in a sense.
Betty, you mentioned that this is your 18th annual Civic Life Institute. Congratulations for that. But in over 18 years,
Has it accomplished anything? Is there some example, something you can point to say this came about because we had a Civic Life Institute, people came together, and then they spread out, and then they accomplished what?
Yeah, actually, they've accomplished many things throughout the state. I'm in awe of what people have done. Depending on the issue, for example, the Eastern Panhandle region came to the Civic Life Institute, had a series of dialogues about the prescription drug abuse problem in that part of the state. Actually, it's a problem throughout the state. And they came up with a number of local actions that they wanted to achieve. Many of them have actually been achieved at this point. There have been statewide conversations on dropout prevention that have led to lots of local coalitions and efforts to help keep our students in high school through graduation. There has been work on early childhood issues that has resulted in partnerships that have created the kind of services and support for young parents who are trying to give their children the best possible start in life. Every issue that has been a part of the kind of national and statewide dialogue in West Virginia has just yielded a great energy in local communities, and it comes about through people coming together for conversations where different points of view can be explored, people can form relationships and coalitions and communities, and then they just kind of can roll up their sleeves and get things done. And often this is building on work that's already going on in communities. And many times local work is happening and the connections aren't necessarily apparent to everyone in communities. So the dialogues that communities sponsor can make those connections more visible, and then that creates avenues for future work.
Betty Knighton, Catherine Moore, the West Virginia Center for Civic Life. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Beth.
The West Virginia Center for Civic Life will be holding its annual Civic Life Institute June 4th and 5th at the University of Charleston. For more information about what's next West Virginia, visit our website, wvpublic.org. This is West Virginia Morning at 7:42. Mostly cloudy with rain and thunderstorms likely today. Some of these storms could produce heavy rain, hail, and strong winds. Temperatures in the 70s and 80s, rain and thunderstorms overnight with lows in the 50s and 60s. There's a chance of rain and thunderstorms on Thursday, a little cooler with daytime highs in the 60s and 70s tomorrow.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by Festival Charleston, June 20th through the 29th, with Festivalt, a new outdoor concert featuring the Drive-By Truckers and Carolina Chocolate Drops. FestivalCharleston.com. West Virginia, wild and wonderful.
An Elkins couple is working to keep storytelling, history, and music alive in Appalachia through their work in Randolph County Schools. Michael and Carrie Klein participate in the Arts Bank program, which has a mission of bringing the arts into public schools. As Cecilia Mason reports, the Kleins enjoy passing the traditions along to young audiences.
The Tennessee stud was long and lean, the color of the sun, and his eyes were green.
Michael and Carrie Klein have spent the past 20 years together collecting stories, making radio documentaries about life in Appalachia, and preserving the region's cultural history.
Over the past 50 years, I've been collecting in one form or another old songs that come down through people's families that are sung from memory and not from looking in a book. We try to share these songs in as many ways as we can.
Michael Klein says they've sung the songs to their own children, to children in schools all over West Virginia, and at festivals across the state.
And it's thrilling work. It's just great to see these kids come alive.
Klein says learning traditional Appalachian songs gives the children a connection to local culture and history.
Many students don't have this connection with the past, and they hate history because they can't relate to it. It's stuffy, it's dusty, and they don't want any parts of it. And so the kids just seem to grow by leaps and bounds as they connect with the past. You know, we talk about songs from the Civil War era that I've recorded right here in Randolph County. And so it makes it easy to talk about the Civil War in terms of what the song reveals about the singer, about the family, about what the family was doing at that time, about what their families might have been doing. It encourages students to go home and talk to the older members of their family in ways that they've never talked to them before, to ask them questions that they've never raised before. And it gives the kids a different sense of themselves.
Some people say man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bone. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. It holds 16 cards, and what do you get?
More recently, we've had our sixth grade choir from Elkins Middle School perform some of their favorites, which includes Bangham and the Wild Boar that Michael recorded from the Hammonds family in Randolph and Pocahontas counties. And this song, turns out, goes back to the time of Beowulf in the 9th century. And that's a big hit with the 5th and 6th graders in Randolph County, and I'm sure it would be around the state. And another big hit with them is 16 Tons and What Do You Get? Another Day Older and Deeper in Debt. I owe my soul to the company store.
I owe my soul to the company store.
Michael and Carrie Klein have recently released a 2-CD set. One CD is called Wild Hog in the Woods.
It's a mix of all the things that we run into in the course of our work. All these themes, all these roots, all these different modern influences as well.
Working Shoes, its companion, is named for a song by a young singer and songwriter and music player, Sam Gleaves, from Southwest Virginia, who is finishing up his studies at Berea College. And it's really the history of coal mining from the beginning of people's poverty and seduction into an industrial way of life, and what propelled this grandpa, owner of the Working Shoes, what propelled him into working for the union, what pushed him over to the picket line. There's also a love song by the same Sam Gleaves called Jordan. You're just like Jordan to me. And it's just the quintessential love song. This Working Shoes one has everything from Pabst's New Billy Goat, which is a fun and funny children's song with some good messages, from Kearns Hammonds, to the death of Harry Sims, who was murdered in 1932 organizing the miners into the miners' union. So it's a look at industrial life, farming life, front porch ways of being.
When the blue light of morning is lost in your hair, I leave my eyes open and search for a prayer. As long as I'm lost in your crystalline stream, you're just like Jordan to me.
For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Cecilia Mason in Martinsburg.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback at wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at WV Public News and find us on Facebook. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Beneduccio. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.